a lot of civility. So that's so, that feels so good. The case will be taken under advisement, like every case.
Okay. Case number 4, 103099, Corey Dix versus Scott Pedley.
Hello, Ms. Crawford, and good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Susan Crawford. I am representing the plaintiff appellant, Corey Dix. If Sheriff Scott Pedley had merely defamed Mr. Dix, this case would be on all fours with Paul versus Davis and Siegert versus Gilley. But Sheriff Pedley did not just defame Mr. Dix. As the district court said, he engaged in a deliberate campaign to block Mr. Dix's employment in law enforcement.
Now, I want to start you off because you raised allegations that Pedley used his office to prevent Mr. Dix from being hired.
Right.
And we know, you know, barring Schulzberg's officers from the jail, not dispatch for Schulzberg in the future, whatever. But can you tell us what is the basis of those allegations? Because from the cites that you have given us and the proposed findings of fact in the district court, you rely on statements by Straussi as to what McNaughton told him that Pedley said to McNaughton, and I need to understand how that is not inadmissible hearsay that cannot be used to defeat summary judgment.
All right. Well, we do have, I believe it was a sworn statement by Officer Strauss, by the chief of police, who had statements made directly to him by Scott Pedley, and also statements reported to him by the mayor. As a law enforcement officer, his statements that are reporting things that he did within the course of his duties may be admitted under the hearsay rule.
How's that? I mean, obviously he can testify what Pedley told him.
Yeah. Right.
But how do you get his account of what the mayor told him?
Well, he produced a report indicating the full course of the interactions that he had as part of this hiring process. That report is part of the record. He submitted it to counsel for Mr. Dix as
who submitted what? Wait.
Chief Strauss.
Okay.
Submitted a police report. A report that laid out in great detail all of the transactions in this case, all of the encounters that he had with Mr. Pedley, Mr. Dix, and the mayor regarding the hiring process as a way to memorialize them.
The declaration by Strauss was relating what McNaughton said to him that Pedley told to McNaughton the way I saw it.
Right. Right. Well,
that would not pass muster. Am I wrong?
Well, I wish I had the rules of evidence in front of me to be able to articulate a better argument. But, you know, I would say issue is that the district court's findings of fact did refer to the statements that that Pedley made, not just to Officer Strauss, but to the mayor. The court acknowledged in a footnote that the pleadings did contain some hearsay statements, but declined to make any specific rulings on what was admissible hearsay and what was not, and then relied on certain of those facts in the district court ruling.
You've clearly got the chief of police saying what Pedley told him.
Right.
And that clearly goes beyond just mere defamation.
Right.
Even if it doesn't get everything in that the mayor told him about it. Let me ask you, if I could, Ms. Crawford, about this area of the law, these liberty interest claims.
Yes.
That I'm puzzled about with your case. The remedy we are usually told by the Supreme Court is, for example, in Codd against Velker, is a name-clearing hearing. Now, it's understandable how that might be done in the context of public statements made in connection with the termination of a public employee. That's where this body of law developed. In the context of someone essentially just being asked for a recommendation, how does that fit at all? And isn't that what was underlying
Seeger? I don't think it does fit. And I think it doesn't fit because the name-clearing proceeding is intended for situations in which an employer has made defamatory statements about an employee incident to termination. That's when those issues come up. And this, you know, it's a very key distinction that this case is not solely a defamation case. Sheriff Pedley engaged in other conduct that was intended to, he intentionally inserted himself into the hiring process and attempted to block Mr. Geck's employment. So I don't think a name-clearing hearing is an appropriate remedy in this case. And in fact, I think it's difficult to think of any post hoc process that could be utilized to cure the violation of due process in this case.
Well, let's suppose Sheriff Pedley's suspicions about your client's honesty and so on were true, and he sees a police department about to make what he views as a very serious mistake. Does the United States Constitution prevent him from taking steps to prevent that?
I think that the U.S. Constitution allows him to offer his opinion. I think it allows him to make an honest assessment of what he thinks Mr. Geck's abilities are as a police officer and any concerns he may have about his character. And he can certainly communicate those concerns and that information to the Sulzberg Police Department. What he cannot do, it's our position that he cannot do, is in addition to not defaming or making false statements against Mr. Geck in order to try to block his employment, but also to insert himself into this hiring process and really make it impossible for the city of Sulzberg to hire him.
Why can't he say, look, I've got control of the jail. I don't trust this guy. I think he's going to steal property. He's going to try to get contraband to prisoners, so I'm not going to let him in. Why is that barred by the Constitution?
Well, the city of Sulzberg is a separate jurisdiction. It's a separate municipality with its own hiring authority. If it were to hire Mr. Geck, and if the sheriff had any evidence after that hiring that Mr. Geck was somehow performing his job improperly for the city of Sulzberg, I think perhaps he could take action.
He knows him from his experience working. He doesn't trust him. He thinks he'll be a threat to the safety of the prisoners. Who knows? Why can't he bar him from the jail? It's the sheriff's responsibility. Imagine the case that would come up when a prisoner is attacked by an unprofessional police officer allowed into the jail, and the sheriff knew about this and knew about this tendency and still allowed him to come into the jail. We'd see a 1983 case by the prisoner, right? Against the sheriff.
I think that whole line of argument is so speculative with due respect, Your Honor. I think that if we had a situation where Mr. Geck had been hired and Sheriff Pedley had attempted to block him from the jailhouse, even though he's a sworn officer of another law enforcement jurisdiction, I believe that presents an entirely different case. And I do think Mr. Pedley would have to have some grounds or some reason to make that determination, or perhaps he could be subject to lawsuit from the city of Sulzberg for not allowing their law enforcement officers within his jurisdiction to do their jobs. All right, I'd like to discuss Paul versus Davis a bit, because I think that it's
just warn you that your light is on.
In that case, I will reserve the rest of my argument for rebuttal. Thank you.
I know, you know, you lose sight of it.
I didn't say
I remember that. All right. Mr. Wistrom.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Oyvind Wistrom. I represent the defendant, Scott Pedley, the sheriff of Lafayette County, in this matter. The only claim that has been brought by Corey Geck in this matter is a claim under 42 U.S.C. Section 1983 claiming an infringement upon his constitutionally protected liberty interest when Pedley made certain statements in connection with his attempt to secure a job with the town of Schulzburg. We believe the facts of this case are squarely within the parameters of the Supreme Court's decision in Siegert versus Gilley, and that plaintiff's attempts to distinguish that case both factually and legally are improper. From a factual standpoint, plaintiff takes significant liberties with the record in an attempt to distinguish the court's holding in Siegert versus Gilley. First of all, as the court aptly noted, the conversations at issue involve a conversation between Sheriff Scott Pedley and the mayor of the city or town of Schulzburg, Mr. McNaughton. And
well, let's just stick with the police, the police chief.
Okay. The only comments that were made directly from Pedley to the police chief, Strauss, was there's some dispute as to Pedley doesn't necessarily concede this.
We're here
purposes
on summary
of judgment. Strauss contends that Pedley advised him that he was a thief, that he committed unemployment compensation fraud, and that maybe there was one other statement that was made. There was a comment made in connection with not allowing or potentially not allowing Gex into the jail if he became an officer for the town.
What about the offer of additional patrols for Schulzburg if Gex was not hired?
That was made at a separate meeting. I believe it was a town meeting of some type.
By Pedley. Okay. That's part of the record, right?
Yes, that is part of the record.
Okay.
But there's nothing in the record to connect Pedley's offer to allow or to provide additional assistance. There's no connection to that and the decision of Schulzburg not to hire Pedley or hire Gex.
This is summary judgment.
Yeah.
Was Sheriff Pedley particularly interested in anything else going on at Schulzburg at the time?
There's nothing in the record to support that, Your Honor.
If the government decided that it would cut off all federal funding to any agency that hired X, do you agree that X should have a constitutional claim? Because the damage there doesn't flow from the injury caused to X's reputation, but it rather would flow from the direct action of the government.
Well, I think the injury in this case, if we can analogize, the injury to Gex was the fact that he was not hired by the town of Schulzburg. There was not any further damage to him or his reputation or anything else by virtue of the promise that Pedley may have made concerning additional resources. So even if he did cut off or not provide certain services to the town as a result of the non-hire or hire of Mr. Gex, there isn't any additional damage to Gex as a result of that conduct. If anything, the damage is to the town.
Wait a minute. If the sheriff uses his office to coerce agencies in the hiring decision by threatening to cut off services or improperly interfere with their functions, wouldn't the damage flow from to the individual from that conduct? That wouldn't be merely from injury to reputation.
But factually, Your Honor, that's a very different case. There was no threat made here to withdraw any services. Plaintiff alleges in her brief that there was a threat not to dispatch or not to provide dispatch services to the town. That statement, according to plaintiff, was uttered by Pedley to McNaughton, and McNaughton relayed that on to Strauss. According to both Pedley and McNaughton, the only two people that were a party to that conversation, both of them indicated there was no comments or no threats made about not dispatching or not providing dispatch services to the town. That was never brought up.
If it happened, though, we've got to worry about other cases. Isn't that troubling under the Constitution? Effectively preventing somebody from going forward in his chosen profession?
Well, potentially, it would prevent him potentially from getting a law enforcement job within the confines of Lafayette County. The sheriff does not have any authority in any other county outside of Lafayette. Wisconsin has 72 counties. It would potentially preclude Gex from accepting or taking a job.
So it's not a constitutional claim if you can live in 71 of 72 counties.
Well, there's a number of cases where if the if the impingement or the violation is significant enough that it prevents the employee from gainfully pursuing their line of occupation, that's a more significant deprivation than a very nominal deprivation. And we would submit to the court.
What is nominal about not being able to live in a free country in the free in the area that you wish to live in?
Nobody prevents him from living within the confines of Lafayette County.
Well, just not working.
He may not be able to work as a law enforcement officer, but nothing prevents another municipality within Lafayette County to hire him. If they wanted to hire him, they had every right to do that.
Well,
the
then,
only potential consequence.
But then what, look at what would flow from that.
Nope.
They
nope.
wouldn't get services.
Well, no. There wasn't any evidence in the record that they wouldn't get services. The only evidence in the record was that Pedley advised that we potentially could prevent Getz from entering the jail. Okay.
Well.
And only to the point where other civilians would be allowed to go. So it wouldn't prevent Getz from functioning as a law enforcement officer. If he was placing somebody under arrest, he could still bring that individual to the Lafayette County Jail
and hand him off to a deputy. It's so tiny. There are no others.
But there would be.
I've got a prisoner. I know you're off, and I know you're asleep because it's 4 a.m. But I'm not allowed to. This is absurd.
Again, it never happened. It was something that Pedley was speculating. This is something that I could do. As the sheriff of Lafayette County, he controls the jail. And if he doesn't trust somebody to enter his jail, he has the right to prevent that person from entering. And that's simply what he did. He advised McNaughton and Strauss and a few others that that's something that I, as a sheriff, have the right to do. It never came to that because the town decided not to hire him.
Who would? What town would under those circumstances?
Well, the only evidence we have in the record is that there was one town that decided not to hire him. But it certainly doesn't rise to the level of, we believe, a constitutional deprivation where it affects his ability to function in his line of work.
You can't seriously mean that, surely, when there is a prior employer saying that a law enforcement officer is a thief and engaged in fraud. What law enforcement agency would hire that person? Now, it may be true, but when the prior employer is saying that, who would hire him?
The Mexican police.
But I think, Your Honor, it misses the issue to some extent because we're dealing with a case which we believe is squarely on point with the Siegert decision, where in order for him to state a claim, he has to prove and establish that the defamatory statements and the conduct was performed incidental to the termination of his employment. And that's consistent with the Paul versus Davis decision where
Why does that requirement – explain the logic behind that requirement to me.
Well, the Supreme Court in two separate decisions has held clearly that there has to be – the deprivation has to be incidental to the termination in his employment.
Explain why. And the Supreme Court says a lot of things. We say a lot of things without necessarily explaining the reasoning behind, and when we're confronted with unpleasant consequences of that reasoning, might say, well, it's time to draw some lines.
Well, I think at the time that there is a termination or an altercation or a change in his status, there is a liberty deprivation or a liberty interest that's at stake. There's a property interest that's at stake at that point, too.
Well, forget the property. We're talking about liberty here. Why is that different a year and a half later?
Well, I think as you're leaving your employer, you have certain expectations of continued employment oftentimes when you're leaving.
He didn't hear. He was moving to a different job, right?
He took a different job in a different state.
So he doesn't get hurt until he wants to come back to Wisconsin and his field of law enforcement.
But if the liberty interest is expanded beyond the incidental to employment or termination, which Siegert established, it would be every job reference potentially would rise to a constitutional liberty deprivation case.
Well, we know that would be true for Dr. Siegert, for example, if that case, if the reference had or the bad news had been shared closer to his termination or resignation, right?
Potentially. But again, that was very close to the end of his employment. I think it was within a couple weeks or a couple months.
But that
the period of time
the several weeks was decisive under the Supreme Court's reasoning, right? So why is that?
I obviously can't get inside the heads of the justices, but they felt that it was important that it needed to be incidental to his employment.
Do you have a rationale?
Again, I think your liberty interest is greater at the time that you depart your employer. Once he accepts a job elsewhere and is looking at relocating and coming back, those interests are different than they are at the time that his termination or the alteration in his employment status. I see that my time is up. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. How much time? Make it two.
I'd like to just clarify something from the record, and that is that we did depose Mayor McNaughton, and he did state that threats were made by Mr. Pedley, offers of additional services were made, et cetera.
Why don't you have a cite to that in your brief?
I apologize for not having a citation for that, Your Honor. It really should be cited.
And, you know, it made me think that it didn't happen.
Yeah, well, and I apologize for that. We should have cited it. And
where do we find it?
Yeah, why don't you send it to us?
I will do that. I also would like to just briefly address the Siegert case. I think that what the court was doing in that case, my theory at least, is that it was applying Paul versus Davis to say that there has to be a direct connection between the damage to reputation and the loss of employment. It said that you cannot find a loss of liberty interest when the impact on employment flows from the damage to reputation. So I think that there's almost an implicit causation argument behind that. And if you look at Paul versus Davis, the primary reason the court seemed to have for wanting to limit the application of Section 1983 claims to these types of defamation cases is in order not to federalize state tort defamation claims in every case involving a local official. And I would say that the concerns that were presented in that case are not presented here because this is not strictly a defamation case.
Would you agree that there's no remedy under state law here because of immunity under immunity for intentional torts under tort claims law in Wisconsin?
I believe that's the case, Your Honor. Just in conclusion, I would like to ask this court to reverse the district court's order granting summary judgment for Mr. Pedley. Thank you.
Thank you again to counsel.